Okay, Alexander, let's do a two-part video once again, because we have a good amount of ground to cover, and we are going to be focusing on Iran. So Iran is going to be the focus of this two-part. So let's start with the first part. And the first part will take us to Iran and Saudi Arabia meeting under the auspices, under the guidance of Iraq. And this is not the first meeting that they've had. This is actually, from what I understand, the fourth meeting that they've had. And Iraq is working to build a bilateral relation between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Iraqi foreign ministers, diplomats, high-level officials have said that they have good relations with Saudi Arabia and they have good relations with Iran. And it looks like they feel they can get the countries to make amends and set up positive diplomatic relations. What does this tell you? This is big news. What does this tell you?
It's absolutely enormous news, and it's a huge change. Now, I can remember doing an article for the Duran, website, in which back in 2017, I was discussing the opinions at that time of Saudi Arabia's de facto leader, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, and he gave an interview in which he spoke about Iran as being an irreconcilable enemy of Saudi Arabia and spoke quite openly about a possible war with the country. So, I mean, it was a situation at that time, we're talking, you know, just a few years ago, when it really did look as if relations between Saudi Arabia and Iran were not just deteriorating, but were heading towards armed conflict. And the Saudis at that time were not only positioned against Iran in places like Syria, where they were backing different sides. I mean, Iran backed Assad's government. The Saudis were backing the insurgency, but they were backing different sides in Iraq. They were backing different sides in Yemen. Of course, the Saudis justified their intervention in Yemen and their war there on the basis that the Houthis in Yemen were supported by Iran. So, you know, these are the two great enemies of the Middle East, of the Muslim world, rivals. There was the Shia-Sunni rivalry and all that. And now, over the last year, we've seen a complete change. We see the Saudis and the Iranians talking to each other. They've had, as you rightly said, four meetings in Iraq. I believe there's also been one other meeting in Oman. There's talk from both sides that these meetings are making progress. There's talk that they're about to resume diplomatic relations. And this is, in effect, almost, you could call it, a diplomatic revolution. It's a complete upturn in the entire situation. And, of course, there are countries in the Middle East, other countries. Iraq is an obvious one, which would like to see a reconciliation between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Iraq is, of course, divided between its Sunni and Shia communities, and with the Shia looking to Iran and with the Sunni looking to Saudi Arabia. Bringing Iran and Saudi Arabia together might achieve some kind of reconciliation between the communities in Iraq. The same is true, by the way, in Syria. And there's been reports that the Saudis have been sending their intelligence chiefs to talk with the Syrian government, and there might be a reconciliation there, you know, based on this overarching reconciliation between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And, of course, that all begs the question, why is it happening? And I think the reason it's happening, and this goes back some time now, it's because of the total lack of confidence in Riyadh, in Saudi Arabia, in the American alliance, which has been the overarching central pillar of Saudi policy since the Second World War. The Saudis have looked to the United States as their key ally. They're beginning to question whether that alliance with the United States is as strong as it has previously been. They're deciding that they can't rely on the US to the extent that they once could. And given that that is so, they're starting to seek reconciliation with their enemies. And of course, their primary enemy is Iran. So that's what's happening. They're now negotiating with the Iranians to achieve a rapprochement. They've lost the support of the US in the Yemen war. They have to come to terms with Iran because they feel that the United States isn't a reliable ally anymore. So this is what is, I think, at the back of this diplomatic revolution, between which we're now seeing. And by the way, the Saudis are quite open about the fact that they're not impressed with the administration, the current administration in Washington. And I suspect this is largely what's driving their policies.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a simple question, a simplistic question. If obviously Saudi Arabia is allied with the United States, and you could talk about energy, oil, and of course the petrodollar, and that goes back many, many decades. You have that alliance, which is a known alliance. I mean, it is there. It is the underpinnings, or was the underpinning, of the entire petrodollar system. You also have a Saudi Arabia alliance with Israel, which is often not spoken about. It is kind of like, you know, an under the table, you know, backroom kind of deal alliance. But it is there, and people know about it, that Saudi Arabia and Israel are aligned with each other. If you take away the alliance with the United States, and you don't consider the alliance with Israel as super important, is there a reason for Saudi Arabia to be at odds with Iran? I mean, is there really a reason for them to be enemies?
Well, there are historic reasons. I mean, there's an Shia community, for example, in Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia is a Sunni fundamentalist state. And it's been very nervous of that Shia community that doesn't always see them as entirely loyal. And, of course, a lot of them are concentrated in the oil-producing regions of Saudi Arabia. So that's always been a sensitive issue for the Saudis. But, of course, there's an argument that it says that the way you deal with the problem of the potential disloyalty of Shia Muslims in Saudi Arabia is that you cut a deal with Iran, so that Iran no longer backs Shia insurgencies or rebellions in Saudi Arabia, and instead has a good relationship with Saudi Arabia. So you can take it that way. Now, I think the Saudis probably will not want to completely break with the United States. I mean, why would they want to do that? I mean, I think that would be a dangerous thing for them. It might leave them vulnerable. But they have probably said to themselves, look, we're not going to pull out of the petrodollar yet. We're not going to end our relationship with the United States entirely yet. But what we sense is that the United States is faltering, is weakening in the Middle East. It's losing interest in the Middle East. We don't have any real reason, as you absolutely rightly say, to be enemies with Iran, provided the Iranians are prepared to do deals with us. There is a basis of a deal there. We don't interfere and seek their overthrow. They don't interfere and seek our overthrow. If we can achieve that, if we can achieve some kind of a modus vivendi with the Iranians, then let's do it, because ultimately, from our point of view, we have no real alternative. The Americans aren't reliable anymore, and we've been locked in this conflict with Iran, which hasn't been going well for us anyway. So, I mean, one could see the logic and the sense of this. There is, by the way, a geopolitical dimension to this also, because, of course, the new government in Iran, the government that was elected a few weeks ago, the one that's headed by the new Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, is showing also less interest in the United States. It's now no longer quite so committed to the Iran nuclear deal as the previous government of Hassan Rouhani was. What it is instead doing is it's forging alliances for Iran with the Eurasian states. So we've had a major economic deal between Iran and China. We've seen Iran edging towards some kind of military package with Russia. And we've just recently had an announcement that Iran is going to join, well, in fact, is now joining the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So what the Saudis want to do is they see all of that. They want to balance it. So they talk to Iran, and at the same time, they act to get closer to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. They've now managed to achieve partner status. And beyond that, they too are negotiating for an arms package with Moscow. So you see, they're all playing this game, very, very typical Middle Eastern game. And the Russians are very skilled at this, playing balance. They say, you don't interfere in us, we don't interfere with you. You approach the Russians and get your arms deals with the Russians, we do the same. You join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, we move closer to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And ultimately, they're deciding to do this because they feel it's in their interests to do it. They don't see Iran as an existential danger anymore. They sense also that this alliance system that Iran is involving itself in is going to try and pin Iran down to a certain degree, and they don't feel they can rely any longer on the United States. The policy of trying to achieve victory over Iran has failed, and they're no longer pursuing it. They're looking for reconciliation instead. So Saudi Arabia, Iran, perhaps not exactly friends, but at least partners in some form. Russia holding the ring, providing arms to both sides. The Chinese heavily invested in both countries. The United States, it remains a superpower. It will continue to have its connections with Saudi Arabia, perhaps at a lesser scale. The country that risks being left out in the cold is Israel.
Right, and that was going to be my follow-up question, actually, is about Israel, and should Israel take notice? What should they do as they see this? And I want to ask you something else. I completely agree with you, by the way. They you've said it many times. Countries don't have to be friends, but they don't have to be enemies. They can be, on a geopolitical level, adversaries and still have diplomatic relations with each other and compete with each other, but they don't have to be enemies. But they can be adversaries, and things can move in a peaceful manner. So I think there's definitely that opportunity. Israel, what does Israel do? Should they take notice? Obviously, Saudi Arabia, even if it's just balancing and moving 20-30% towards this new multipolar world and this Eurasian model, is huge. Obviously, now Iran is fully in the game. They're fully invested. Turkey, Erdogan met with Putin, and Erdogan said it straight out. You know, I like this Eurasian model pretty much. I'm paraphrasing, but he was pretty much, I didn't have a good meeting with Biden. And this Eurasian model looks kind of sweet. So he looks like he's hedging his bets towards this Eurasian model. Here's a question as you discuss Israel, Alexander, what Israel should do. Is it a case of the U.S. not interested in the Middle East, or is the Middle East starting to lose interest in the U.S.? Is it a chicken or the egg kind of thing?
It's both. But actually, you put it really well, because in fact, the reality is it's the second more than the first. It's the Middle East increasingly losing interest in the United States. They're looking at the situation in Washington. They see a dysfunctional administration. They see a weak presidency. They see a Secretary of State that nobody can take seriously. They see a vice president who, I'm not even going to discuss how they feel about her. And they say to themselves, this country is absorbed with its own problems. It's got ideas which, we just don't understand and can't relate to. And we just don't really feel that we can work with them anymore. They've messed up Afghanistan. They've failed in Iraq. They're not achieving anything successful. So, this is the point where we start to say to ourselves, we're not really going to continue with this anymore. And by the way, that's a major reverse. Just consider, a year ago, there were, with the previous administration, that much maligned previous administration, led by the bad orange man, it was quite the opposite. The Gulf monarchies not only wanted to be close to the United States, they so much wanted to be close to the United States that they were opening embassies in Israel. There were all the Abraham Accords. And it's astonishing to see how all of that is turning to dust. And without the United States being able to do anything about it or caring very much about it. So I think you're absolutely right. I think it's more a case of the Middle East losing faith in the United States, losing interest in the United States. They don't see a strong purposeful United States anymore. They don't see a United States that's able to provide those guarantees that the Gulf monarchies feel they need. And so they're turning to the Eurasian powers, to China and Russia to do it instead. And they're patching up their differences with Iran, which for its own reasons, it's also turning to the Eurasian powers. Where does that leave Israel? It leaves Israel out in the cold, more so than at any time since the end of the Cold War, in my opinion, because what happened was, after the Soviet collapse, in fact, even a little before, the Israelis were left in a very dominant position in the Middle East. They were the allies of the only superpower, the United States. They were, in effect, the big game in town. And they forged very close links with the United States, obviously, especially close links with the Trump administration. And now what they see is the American position in the Middle East going down and Israel's position weakening alongside it, because Saudi Arabia is edging away from the United States and, by definition, edging away from Israel. The other Gulf monarchies, which established diplomatic relations with Israel, well, they've not reversed that, but they're starting to apparently dial down the importance of that. And Israel, having lost its long-standing veteran prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, who, let me stress again, I didn't like, but, you know, I acknowledge always his, you know, very real political and diplomatic skills, having lost him, having lost its friend in the White House, now with a very weak presidency in the United States, with a Democratic Party, several of whose members are very opposed to Israel, they're feeling, I think, increasingly isolated. And what their options are, it's beginning to become increasingly difficult to see. Because, of course, one possibility is that they could try and escalate against Iran. But the trouble is that most people who have studied these things, and I, you know, I'm not a military person, but most people who studied these things and who know about these kind of matters say that an Israeli military strike on Iran is not going to achieve very much unless it has American backing. And that American backing simply isn't there at the moment. Apparently, the US has told Israel that it is not going to support a military strike on Iran. And so Israel's position as a result is becoming weaker. And I'm not sure how the Israelis will respond and what exactly they're going to do. I suspect that the instinct of Israeli politicians caught in this kind of situation will be to try to build up some level of support in Washington and try to sort of change the politics there. Well, I think if they can do that, well, good luck, because with this administration, I think it's going to be proved extremely difficult.
You don't think there's any type of instinct in the Israeli political class to maybe follow like Saudi Arabia's model? To, I'm not saying copy it, but, you know, also say, you know, let's also take a look at the Eurasian guys over there, or no, that's a no-go.
Now that is actually a very interesting idea, because, of course, bear in mind that both Russia and China have had relations with Israel, and Russia has good relations with Israel. I mean, and the Russians have at various points and in time not hinted, they've openly said that if Israel wants to find some means of patching up matters, then Russia is there to help. And Russia will be prepared to provide a bridge to enable Israel to talk with the Arab countries, even conceivably with the Iranians too. So that is an option. I don't think it's an easy one for Israel to follow, simply because it's possible In fact, it's highly likely that the Iranians specifically are particularly, and to some extent, I suspect, if it went public, even the Saudis would demand concessions from Israel on, you know, settlements on the West Bank, rights of the Palestinians, those sort of things, which Israel might find very difficult to do. It's possible that Israel will do it one day. But in order to do that, it needs a strong government, a capable prime minister, somebody who has the necessary authority in Israel itself and the necessary diplomatic skills. There isn't anybody immediately obvious like that in Israel at the moment. Having said that, Israel is never to be underestimated. There are some extremely, you know, tough-minded, realistic, clever people in Israel. For Israel to have, you know, kept on top in the Middle East, this very tough neighbourhood, for so long, it shows, whatever else you may think about Israel, high levels of political skill. It's entirely possible that one day you will see somebody like that emerge in Israel with the necessary authority to cut the necessary deals, in which case the route probably lies through Moscow.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's take the route now towards Tehran and Iran, and let's shift focus a little bit and look at the Caucasus, specifically Azerbaijan.